The expressed views of the guests on this podcast are theirs alone and not necessarily endorsed by the host, TWBC, or any associated sponsor. Conversations that are robust yet balanced, on point and to the point. You are listening to The Talk of Tournament Water Ski. This is the TWBC podcast. And now, here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
Well, hey, greetings, everyone. Welcome to this edition of the TWBC podcast. My name is Tony Lightfoot, and glad to have the presence of your company once again. Well, it's certainly been a great season. A lot of highs, some lows in one or two places, and one of the competitors that has really shone this season with her performances in many Pro Tour events is the guest that I have here right now. Say hello, Ali Garcia.
Hello, Tony.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Not too bad. Not too bad. So let's start off with the start of the season. What was your first event?
My first event was actually the University Worlds in New Zealand in February.
That must have been an absolutely fantastic journey to be a part of, huh?
That was a really great experience. I'm super grateful for it. It made for a long season, but it was so fun.
Okay, so tell us about the lake. Tell us about the facility that was there, because I mean it wasn't your typical, you know, sculpted, you know, man-made lake facility, you know, but it was large, it was, you know, susceptible to the elements. So how did it go?
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it right, but I believe it was on the Ōrākei Basin. It was definitely an experience. It was super open, super wide, salt water. Quite rolly, and there was one course that was less rolly but very windy, and if it got too windy there was a second course that was extremely rolly. So that was definitely a variable. It was not an easy place to ski, but the organizers did such an amazing job, and it was such a fun event that I think everybody was just happy to be there, and obviously you make do with what you have.
Indeed, indeed. It was a preliminary and a final, wasn't there?
Yes.
Okay. So how did each one go?
They both went pretty well for me, honestly. I think I was the only girl to run 35 in the prelims, and then in finals, Luisa Hermio went out and ran 4:38, and I just didn't quite get the start I needed, and I ran 3, so I ended up second. But it was super fun. Another girl named Daniela ran 3. Due to backup, she came 3rd. So considering the conditions, it was a really high-scoring event. I think that it made Moomba feel pretty easy, which is scary to think about. But the scores were big. The girls were skiing well. It was really exciting. It was a fun event. They did a great job. They had so many things set up for us. The banquet was super fun. It was beautiful. I'm so happy I got to go. I really hope that we get to continue having these collegiate worlds, because it's a fun in-between of kind of U21 and open almost.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really good for the sport to kind of have that age group continue to compete.
Indeed, indeed. And you recently graduated from Louisiana's Raging Cajuns, right?
Yes, I graduated this past December.
Mm-hmm. So what was that degree in? I think, was it something to do with pre-law or something like that?
It was political science pre-law with a minor in criminal justice. I worked part-time this spring as a law clerk, and now I am in law school.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. And how long will you be in law school for if everything all goes to plan?
I think that I'm going to take a little bit longer. It's typically a 3-year degree. I think I'm going to take about 3.5 or 4. I'm currently doing part-time because I started maybe 2 weeks before Open Worlds, and I was a little worried that if I was drowning in schoolwork, I would have a hard time getting my skiing in. So, priorities.
Okay, same as law school as your brother?
No, I am doing online through Southwestern, which is based in Los Angeles. It's actually where my grandfather and my uncle went.
Oh, okay, so you're a little bit of a legacy there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so after the Collegiate Worlds in New Zealand, you went to Moomba.
Yes, I haven't been to Moomba since 2020. For me, it's been so hard because I've been in school, and it's a little bit colder in Louisiana in January and February than Florida. So it makes getting ready for Moomba really hard. And also, it's a very long way to go for one event. So University Worlds kind of made it feel more worthwhile, two events on that side of the globe, kind of back to back. So that's why I got to go to Moomba this year.
Okay, you previously alluded to the fact that the collegiate worlds, being in New Zealand, being in rolly conditions, actually prepared you a little bit for Moomba. But the one thing that Moomba kind of throws at you that you can't really prepare for too much is the current.
Yeah, no, you can't really prepare for Moomba. I feel like that's something I accepted a long time ago. You can, especially like for us coming from off season, there's no way that you're going to go into Moomba feeling like, oh, I'm at my peak right now. You just try to focus on consistency, being in shape, being on the water, and then you get there and deal with whatever's thrown at you.
Okay, so tell us how the event went from your perspective. You know, starting off with the first round, which I think normally occurs on the Friday, doesn't it?
This year, yeah, it was Friday, and then there was a cut and an LCQ. I made it through on the first cut, so I did not have to participate in the LCQ, which I was extremely grateful for because there were some upsets in prelims. Whitney McClintock and Regina Jaquist did not make it through the first cut, so they were in the LCQ, and there was only two spots in the LCQ, so it was definitely a relief to not be competing against them for those. And then finals, you know, I didn't ski exactly how I wanted to ski, but I felt like I skied well given the conditions and kind of where I was at physically.
Okay, so just trying to give us a little bit of a sense of what Moomba's like. I've spoken to a whole bunch of people. I've never been to Moomba myself. I'd love to go, you know. So I mean, give us a little bit of your sales pitch, you know, to anyone who's like on the fence, wanting to decide whether to go or not.
You know, it's a very unique event. It's very cool to be skiing through the middle of a city. It's paired with like a festival, so there's a lot of people around, which adds definitely to a lot of the viewership. I would say that it's something you have to go to once in your life.
Okay, there we go. Okay, that's pretty simple. But beyond the scope of Moomba, once you returned stateside, what happened then? I mean, your next tournament was going to be
Swiss Pro.
Mm-hmm.
So I took, I think, a week and a half off. I went back to California, to the mountains where I'm from, and I snow skied and I hiked and I took a little reset. And then I went back to the south and started training for the start of the season.
Okay, so, I mean, how did that go? I mean, a lot of people, I mean, most of the people that I've spoken to have put a high premium on being able to take rest at various points in the season, you know, just step away, reset, you know, recharge, you know. But I mean, you obviously did it at the beginning. How do you think it went for you vis-a-vis the Swiss Pro Slalom?
I think it went well. I was working through some things in the early season, and I felt like I was skiing technically the best I ever had, but I wasn't quite able to put everything together in an event till honestly late summer, which really wasn't fun. But I'm a huge proponent of taking time off. I think that it's absolutely necessary to keeping your drive and your desire to ski. I'll take a week off multiple times throughout the season, and I've never regretted it. I've always come back feeling stronger, healthier, mentally refreshed. Especially for me, I like to go back to California and get in nature and hike and snow ski or whatever it is, kind of just completely get away from skiing. It's hard to be in Central Florida and take a week off because you're staring at perfect ski lakes and you just want to keep going. So I like to completely remove myself from that temptation.
Okay, so let's talk about a little bit specifically the Swiss Pro. How did you perform there?
I was skiing so well coming into Swiss Pro. I felt like I was skiing the best I ever had. And in the first round, I skied pretty good. I got a half at 39. And then the second round, I needed two at 39 to make finals. And I think I didn't have the confidence to match my technique quite yet. I got 5.5 at 38, which is something that I've done an infuriating amount of times. So I was a bit heartbroken about that one. I think that Swiss Pro is an event that's always kind of like the tester for the season. It's the
kind of like the litmus.
It's the first event, and that's not, you know, Moomba. It's the first event on a good lake. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of where you kind of kick off your season. Some people come out strong. I historically don't come out super strong. It takes me a minute to kind of get in a groove of events and tournaments. So I kind of walked away from Swiss happy with my 38 that I ran. It felt really simple, really clean. And I just tried to grasp onto that feeling and that thought process and move forward.
Okay, so that so what did you take away from it? Because, I mean, you alluded to having the confidence to kind of match your to kind of match your skill and being able to take it one step beyond beyond your comfort zone. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think I'd never run 38 at Swiss before. So for me, it was kind of like, okay, I'm starting this season with my best performance at this point at this event. So that was kind of a good feeling and like, okay, yeah, maybe I wanted a bit more, but it's there. Like I'm on the cusp of where I want to be. So let's just keep moving forward.
Okay. So after Swiss, what was the next tournament?
We had the LCQs.
Never a pleasant experience for anyone that I've ever spoken to.
They are not my favorite event personally. I'm all for growing the sport, and I think that it's two pro events that have no money and no publicity. Mm-hmm. And that is hard. That is hard to want to support, but you want to ski Masters. I'm a competitor. I want to go to Masters. I want to be in the mix. I want to ski. So we all ski them. We all might mumble and groan, but we all ski them. And then I qualified for Masters at the second LCQ. Mm-hmm. So by the second weekend of May, I had skied through three essentially pro events, which is, it's a bit tiring. Going into Masters already kind of like, wow, I'm tired, I'm burnt out. This was a really, May is a really high stress, almost like fatiguing month,
mm-hmm.
which is hard because it's the first month really. But I think that format of like LCQs, like we had two, they were at the same lake. So you ski four rounds, we have a runoff, it's all this stuff. It's a lot of skiing, kind of compact. And then on Sunday, we all went to Swiss, which is multiple rounds. It's fatiguing for sure. There's, I think, a week before we go to Europe after mm-hmm. Masters. And I was actually hurt. I hurt my elbow and could not go to Lake 38, which was the weekend before we left for Europe. So I took that whole week off and kind of reset, got ready to go to Europe. And I'm very grateful I did that because I think I would have been really burnt out if I didn't.
And the Masters event itself is pretty tough. You know, you're on Robin Lake, you know, the conditions not typically conducive to a lot of high level slaloming, but the LCQs were on a pretty much a perfect lake, and it's a lake that not many others have skied before. I think it was like the first time they actually had an LCQ of the LCQs. So what was the general vibe of having the event moved from a place that's, you know, just a hop, skip, and a jump from where you'd been living for several years to having to travel to somewhere outside of Auburndale?
Yeah, I think it was like a 50-minute drive for most of us. Obviously, it's easier on the Florida skiers because we can drive. I just came back, and I live in Texas now, but I came back and I stayed with my parents, and it was a pretty easy trip. For those, like I was speaking to Corey Vaughn, and you know, he's coming from Virginia, so it's hard to come two weekends in a row for him. Yeah, I don't have a whole lot to say about the events, honestly. They're very small. I think there was like 20 skiers. It's a weird vibe. It was like, you know, 10 pro skiers around an empty lake in the middle of nowhere.
If you had the power to change the format, how would it go?
Oh, goodness. You're going to get me in trouble, Tony. I don't know, honestly. I think that's up to the tournament organizers.
Very diplomatically answered. Okay, the Masters itself, how did that go?
I had a great time at Masters. It's a really cool event. It's the prestige is really there. It's a cool venue. It's a cool site. I enjoy it. It's a hard place to ski, but year after year, we see people perform in spite of that. So I think that although it's difficult, people have shown that it's possible to ski well there.
Okay, so you weren't able to go to Lake 38, as you alluded to, because you'd picked up an injury.
Yes.
Before going to Europe. But your first event in Europe was which one?
Monaco. Yes.
You like the site there at Roquebrune?
Oh, it's a great site. Unfortunately, this year we had wind, which I had not experienced there before. Typically, I feel like we see really big scores. We did again this year, but the wind was definitely a factor. I like that tournament. The organizers are amazing. The club members are kind. It's a beautiful area. I love Roquebrune. I love the beach. I love France. So it's a good opener. It's very chill. I feel like everybody likes going to that event.
Do you like seeing yourself in Monte Carlo or Monaco?
I went to Monaco last year. I didn't actually go in this year. This year, we went to a few places. It's always fun to see new places. I think it's important to take advantage of getting to fly all over the world and actually sightsee and not just see a lake, check it off, and head to the next tournament.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so after that was what tournament?
I think it was Morocco.
Morocco, yes. Yeah, the Royal Nautique, yes. Pro in Rabat.
Yeah, so we stayed in Monaco for a few days and trained there. Alexi was amazing, letting us ski with him and kind of pulling us every day.
Alexis Kisoglou, yeah.
Yes. And then he was super kind. He had a ton of us staying at his lake for a few days. And then we all kind of made the trip over to Morocco together, which was hilarious because I think there was like 25 ski bags on that plane. We were a bit nervous, but all made it to Rabat. They were great there. Immediately, they picked us up with like Porsches and BMWs with the tournament logo on the side of the car, which is not something we get to experience very often. We went to a beautiful hotel that they put us up at, and it was a cool event. It's always a great event when the Bellemare family hosts, but this one, they really outdid themselves. The dinner parties every night and we had a drone show this year. Left everybody speechless. They were literally creating skiers in the sky with drone lights. So definitely one of the coolest events I've ever been to.
And probably the conditions out there it was a tidal river, wasn't it? You know, I mean, they tried to time it almost to perfection, you know, to where the competitors would be skiing in the best conditions possible, you know, where it was a slack tide.
Yeah.
Wasn't it? Okay. So how did you feel that went?
I mean, the Bellemares are amazing. They listen to the skiers. That's the best thing I've noticed since they've hosted us is they kind of realize that this is their first or second pro event, you know, and they are amazing about listening to what the skiers want and what we think. So I think that nobody was angry about any conditions or issues because we could tell that the organizers and the drivers and the judges were doing the absolute best they could to give us the best conditions possible. And we were, at the end of the day, we were trying to put on a show. So I think there was an understanding there. And it was hard. The conditions were not consistent. There was only so much that could be done. Some skiers had it better than others. Some people handled it. Some people struggled. And I think that that's kind of just the nature of an outdoor sport.
Now, it's been fair to say that over the last few seasons, whenever you've traveled to far out and rather unusual places, you've been a little bit apprehensive, not so much the last season or two. So I mean, you visited the center of Rabat, the souks and the monuments and everything. So how did you feel what the vibe was, you know, with the local population to these merry band of skiers that have suddenly shown up on their doorstep?
You know, I wasn't really sure what to expect. We went to Marrakesh last year and we didn't really have a lot of interaction with people because the ski lake was kind of out in the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. This year we were in the middle of the city, so we would hop on a tram and go to the markets and go see different things, and we had a lot more interaction. Everybody was super kind. Everybody was super nice. obviously you try to be respectful of the culture and stuff. Like, I know us girls, a lot of us wore like just like long sleeve linen shirts and stuff around to be respectful, but everybody was really kind, excited to see us, excited to have us. It felt super welcoming.
Did you pick up any souvenirs?
I did. I got a nice little Moroccan shirt and a purse. I always go shopping. I can't help it.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. So, I mean, how did you ski in the event itself?
The first two rounds, I didn't ski great. I was having a really hard time getting my bearings, just with the current and the wind. It was so different. Finals, I skied the best I'd skied all tournament. I ran 4:38, which I wanted more. I felt like I was capable of running it, which we always want more. Everybody always wants more. At the end of the day, I was happy with it. I ended up fourth, which is like one of those placements that's super bittersweet. You know, you're happy because it could have been worse, but you're bummed because it was so close to being awesome.
Yeah, indeed, getting on that podium. So after Morocco, next tournament was Portugal, right?
Yes, Portugal. I had never been to Portugal before.
Neither have I.
So it was the first time I got to go somewhere new in a while, which was super exciting. We did a little bit of touristing around and saw everything. It was really cool. The tournament site, they had never had a tournament there before, I don't believe.
No.
So it was a bit of a work in progress. We got there early in the week, and they were doing so much to like make it ready for us. And throughout our practice sets that week, we kind of worked with the drivers, worked with the officials to figure out what was the best boat path, because rollers were a factor. And
I was about to ask you what the major challenge was going into the event.
Yeah, I think just like it was a bit of a funky place. It could get really rolly. But the amount of effort that the drivers, like Roma, he worked with us all week on what the best possible boat path would be. And Frank was super receptive to drop time suggestions. And they really talked to us girls, which is awesome, because my first set versus what it felt like in the tournament was completely night and day, like the amount of improvements that they did to make it a great tournament site.
Okay, so down to brass tacks, how did you ski?
I did not ski very well. Honestly, the beginning of Europe, I was having a really hard time. The first two rounds, I would always ski pretty bad. And then finals, I would ski better, but not quite how I wanted to ski. I felt like I was skiing the best I'd ever skied in my life, but I just could not piece it together. And that was really mentally exhausting.
Were you questioning your endurance of being able to hold that level up high?
For sure. I felt like I was over here and I was struggling, and it was my first time going to Europe on my own, and I was in a strange place alone, skiing terrible, really feeling defeated. And there was a lot of moments where I kind of questioned if being on the tour this summer was the most productive thing for my skiing. There were moments where I was like, should I go home and get ready for Worlds? Should I go home, get on a familiar lake and try and fix whatever's wrong? There was a lot of conversations with my parents, with my friends who I trust, my coaches, kind of like, what should I do? You know, I wanted to go home. I was looking at flights. I was feeling really defeated. And thanks to people who I trust and people who are in my corner, I decided to stick it out, because I felt like I would learn more through struggling through this than giving up and going home. And I also wasn't sure I would forgive myself for giving up on myself.
One of your closest confidants is Trent Finlayson.
Yes.
You know, who you train with over in San Marcos River Ranch in your new home of Texas.
Yes.
So what was his advice?
He kept trying to point out the small wins in each set. Like for me, I was just like defeated. But Monaco, he pointed out that I skied horrible the first two rounds. And then I ran 38 in finals. I brought it together when it counted, and that took more mental strength than I thought I had. And he kept trying to point out the things where, hey, this was a point of growth. And I think that was super helpful and really productive. He was very patient with me because there were moments where I didn't really want to hear it. And then Zane Nicholson was at every single one of our events announcing and interviewing us. And I've skied with Zane in the past in Louisiana and just around. I would consider his sister, Allie, one of my best friends. And he really encouraged me to stick with it. Like, he kept telling me that I was skiing technically better than he had ever seen, and that my technique was through the roof. I just wasn't putting it together, but it was gonna click. It was gonna click. And he told me, he's like, look, in Portugal, that's when I was looking at flights home. I was checked out in Portugal. I did three events where I was disappointed. And he was like, I'm not gonna tell you what to do, but I'm just gonna say that if you leave, I'll be disappointed. And that was kind of one of those moments where I was like, not the disappointed talk, you know? But it definitely convinced me to stay.
Yeah, it was kind of, you kind of alluded to it earlier, whether you had enough confidence to match the skill level that you were bringing into the situations.
Yeah, I think it's hard to have confidence when you don't feel like you've skied to the ability that you should. Like, you have to fake it till you make it sometimes. And I had to fake confidence, but it's hard because you have to convince yourself that you're not faking it, but you are, if that makes any sense.
I get you. So you made the decision to stay.
Mm-hmm.
Next event was Botas, right?
Yes. Botas went better. It still wasn't great. I can't even remember what happened. Finals did not go well. First two rounds went a lot better. I think I ran 38 twice. I was pretty happy. And then finals, I was in a head-to-head against Brooke Baldwin, and I went first. And I just was so in my mind about running 38 and so stressed and questioning everything. And I got like four, lost the head-to-head, and I was pretty beat up again. I was like, gosh darn it, like, why can I not just put this together? But I think that Botas lit a bit more of a fire, because I was like, okay, I can ski well. It's there. Like, it's almost there. Botas, I was like, okay, I can see it. I just haven't grasped it. Versus the first three tournaments, I couldn't even see it. So it was definitely like building throughout this tour, which it's hard to take 4 weeks on a tour where you're spending time and money and all these emotions to be like, okay, I'm building, it's fine, be patient. That's not an easy thing to tell yourself.
Okay, so we're approaching like the midway point of the pro season. You know, many of the competitors were already focusing on the Worlds and the title events in Europe, which obviously you couldn't be a part of. So, what was your next event after Botas, and how did things go up on the run up to Ricchetto?
My next event was San Gervasio,
of course,
which is one of my favorite events, obviously. I felt really good going into that event. I finally started to feel some confidence again. I had like a fire in my belly, I feel like. And I was going into that event, and it was the first time in a while where I was like, I feel like something, I could do something good this weekend. Like, sometimes before tournaments, you're just like, I feel like I can. And that was the first event. And I feel like people are tired of hearing the story, but obviously it went really well for me.
Okay. I mean, and at this point in the season, obviously you're open to a lot of advice and a lot of counsel from a whole bunch of people. You're on the phone to Trent, and I'm sure you probably sought some advice from the likes of Matteo as well, who's
Matteo was so busy with his event. I mean, the work he puts in. I didn't really see Matteo. I went to Thomas de Gasperi's for a few days.
How was that?
Oh, I love it up there. I go every time I can. Thomas was actually one of my first ever ski coaches. He like pretty much got me running the course. So to go ski with him, I'm close with his mom, to see his mom. It was kind of like a break, go home. And he's somebody that I feel like I can lean on. He's known me since I was 7 years old. So that was a great like moment of support. There's just a lot of people on the tour, and I think that's the coolest thing about it is like, these are your friends and your family. There were so many people that I turned to throughout this trip, because I was on my own. I was traveling on my own. I was staying on my own, and that's very different for me, and that was hard. So I would turn to my friends like Allie Nicholson, and Freddie Winter gave me some advice, and Will Asher always supports me when I need it. So it was one of those moments of like, it really did take a village to get me through this tour.
I think it's probably fair to say that in your experiences with being in Europe, you know, your early experiences of traveling on your own are well documented, but including that infamous railway trip to get to San Gervasio.
Luckily, I am a lot more skilled at traveling now, and that was not an issue. I'm very comfortable with the cars and the flying and the driving. It's just when skiing isn't going great and you're
stressed
and you're sitting in your Airbnb alone and you're eating dinner alone and you're eating breakfast alone, it's hard to not like spiral more, you know?
Yeah, because that headspace gets rather lonely in that situation.
For sure.
Okay, so San Gervasio, how did that go?
It went amazing. I mean, it was a tournament of my life, hands down. I ran 2 and 3 at 39, and both I felt like I was capable of doing that, if not more. I felt solid. My first head-to-head pairing was against Jamie Metcalf. I ran 2 at 39. She ran 1.5. That was a close pairing. That was the best she'd skied all year, which was really awesome to see her kind of like rise to that occasion as well. Mm-hmm. I was super nervous with the two. I was not sure if that was going to be enough. But I made it through, and that was kind of my goal. I was like, if you make it through your first pairing, you have a chance at a podium, and that's your goal. So I made it through, super happy about that. And then my next pairing, Manon and Jamie went before Ali Nicholson and I. Manon got 1.5 at 38. And I remember kind of being like super bummed for Manon because she is one of the kindest human beings I know. But also, it's one of those moments where you're like, okay, I know what I need to get on the podium. And I went to Will Asher and was like, should I ask turn 2 ball? And he was like, what are you asking me right now? Like, just go ski. But I was so hyper-focused on that podium, and I was so close to kind of meeting that goal. So I think that's kind of all I was thinking about, was like, just make sure you get the full 2, and then you can do whatever you want to do at 38. And then safety 2, ran a scrappy 38, and I dropped at the end, and Nathan McGarry was my boat driver, and I was like, well, I don't think I've ever run it 4 rounds in a row, so this is great. Like, what a win, you know? I'm I'm in third. I'm psyched. This is cool. And then Allie went and ran 3, and I was like, well, that's my personal best, so maybe I'll go tie her. That'd be cool, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And Nathan looked at me, and he's like, I remember 2 years ago when Jamie Bull ran 4 at 38, and you went and ran 4.5, when that was still a really big score for you. And I was like, oh, yeah, like, I do like when you drive me. And he said, today's a good day for a personal best. And I was like, kind of laughed, whatever. And he's like, why not? This is all in the 45-second drop time, so you know, things are moving quick.
That's a lot of ground to cover.
Oh, we chat on the ends. I'm a talker for sure. And I was like, yeah, you know what? Why not? I remember coming into 3 ball, super down course. I was like, I'm going to fall here, obviously. Like, I've never tried to turn it. I guess the water gods were on my side. I hooked up and I got to 4 ball. I committed to throwing the ski, which thank goodness, because my brother would have killed me if I didn't. And I won my pairing against Allie, which was definitely the highlight of my career so far.
Okay. And then eventually at the end of the tournament, that was the win, wasn't it? Or
I got second.
You got second.
I got second.
Yeah, I'm just trying to.
There's a lot of tournaments to keep track of. I ended up second. I skied against Jamie in the last pairing, and I ran 3 at 38. And I came in and everybody was like, I thought you were in it. I thought you were going to get to 5 ball. And I was like, guys, 30 minutes ago, that was my personal best. I am psyched. I am A-okay with this. And although I came second, that tournament definitely felt like a win for me.
Okay. So now your confidence was, on the scale of confidence and skill, your confidence was taking a more of an uptick.
Yeah. You know, I've come second before at pro events, but they've been head-to-head formats. And often when I've come second, third place has had a higher score because they had a higher losing score, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I get you.
Yeah, it's possible for me to come second with 1 at 39 and third to have 2. So my seconds have not really been score-wise the second best score of the tournament. Mm-hmm. And that was always kind of like fed into the imposter syndrome a little bit of like, am I just up here because it's head-to-heads? like, yeah, you have to go out and you have to do it when it counts, but it still, it puts that little thought in your mind. So for me to come second with the second best score of the weekend felt huge.
All right, then. So first break of the season, first true break of the season, really, mm-hmm. for a lot of competitors occurred right after San Gervasio. So what was it, what was your next tournament after that?
Oh, my gosh. I think...
Yeah, that's a difficult one, isn't it?
I think it's U.S. Nationals.
Nationals out in Cali.
Yeah, I went out. I hadn't been to Nationals in a while, and I remember always really enjoying it as a junior, and it always meant a lot to me when pros would come as a junior, and I realized that not many pros were going because of the trip, so I decided to go out and do it, and it was super great because my boat from Mastercraft was actually out there for the Western Regionals, so I got to spend the week out there and train behind my pro star. Thank you, Mastercraft.
There you go.
And it was super fun. I had never skied on the lake before, and I went and ran another 3:39, and that was like kind of reaffirming Italy, which was nice.
Okay, so now we're stepping into like the run up to the real true run up to the Worlds, because the next event after that was Cali Pro, wasn't it?
Yes, I did not go to California Pro-Am. I was doing some stuff for Mastercraft. We have these events called Let Her Rip, and we had one on Lake Tahoe, which was super exciting, where we get to go out and get women and girls on the water, driving boats, wake surfing, skiing.
How important is that to you?
To me, that means the world. This year at Lake Tahoe, I got to work with the High Five Foundation in Let Her Rip, which is adaptive. It's an adaptive water sports, like... charity almost.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to take these amazing women out at varying levels of disability and paralysis and get them wake surfing, which I mean is the most rewarding thing I've gotten to do. These are some of the most inspiring women I've ever met. I got to work with a Paralympian. She was amazing and one of the toughest people I've ever met. So for me, that kind of felt more important than skiing another event.
So would you throw your hat in, for example, if the USA water ski adaptive discipline were to come up and ask you, we're going to the Worlds at a certain time, we need your support, we need your help, like they did several seasons ago with like Brian Dedrick. I mean, would you be open to something like that, maybe?
I mean, I'm all for anything that gets people on the water. I'm not sure how much help I would be, honestly. What they do is harder than what we do.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I could help very much. I've gotten to volunteer at this event called All Can Ski. They actually came to my lake in San Marcos, Texas, and we got a bunch of adaptive people on the water for the first time. And that was super fun. I just got to hang out, hear their stories, make sure that their ski stayed floating the right way, got them up, supported them. And I mean, I think that those are some of the best parts of our sport. So absolutely.
Yeah, I got to work a little bit with water ski wake sports at Alberta whenever they come over to Bennett's, and they bring a whole bunch of their competitors down with them. And that's always a thrill.
For sure. I think that anything that gets people on the water, I'm all for. I love working with kids. That's my favorite. And the adaptive people, there were some kids as well, and they had some of the most inspiring stories and also made you realize just how freaking tough they are. Do not treat them like they are glass, because they absolutely rip. And that was really cool to see.
Indeed, indeed. I would certainly agree with that sentiment as well. So, I mean, So you had time to do that. I mean, how much time did you have to actually go back to Texas and run a few sets with Trent and whomever?
I feel like this year I have been all over the place. Before Worlds, I finally got to be in Texas for 2 weeks straight, which I think is the longest I've been in one place since May.
It's the barbecue. It's got to be the barbecue.
Oh, it's the Mexican food, not the it's the Mexican food.
No, but
it's,
the barbecue's pretty good too.
I don't know. It's hard. But no, it was really nice to kind of be home and unpack my suitcase for a bit. But I also, I love being on the road. I mean, it's such a cool thing what we get to do, and I wouldn't trade it for the world.
Okay, so 2 weeks, and then you went to the Worlds, right? Around about that time.
I did 2 weeks in Texas, 2 weeks in Orlando, or a week and a half in Orlando with my brother, because Trent had a ton of work to do in Washington, so I went to ski.
This is Washington State rather than DC.
Yes.
Okay.
He was in Seattle.
Yeah, in Seattle.
And I went and skied with my brother because I just really wanted something like consistent and familiar. So I went and skied with my brother for a bit leading into Worlds, and then went to Italy from there. So it was kind of, it was a nice build up. It was pretty chill. Didn't really change a whole lot. I like to keep things pretty low key leading into Worlds. I don't want to get into like the whole craze of, oh my gosh, it's Worlds. We need to make this a huge build up and stress ourselves out more than we need to.
Okay, so what was your mind space looking like going into the first round of the world? What was kind of being, you know, projected into your mind a little bit as to how to approach this event, being the world championships?
Honestly, I've never been more nervous in my life. I was shaking on the dock. I physically was shaking. My best friend Neely and I were talking before, and we were like, have you been this? And she's like, I don't think I've ever been this nervous before, because the past two, I'd never skied a world outside the US. The past two worlds were at Jax, and it was kind of like the cut was 2 at 39. That was still a really big score for me. People weren't expecting me to make finals then. So it was kind of like, if I did, it would have been cool, but I didn't have that expectation. Versus this worlds, I was ranked sixth. So I was really high, and the expectations were for me to make finals. Like, it would have been weird if I didn't.
Yeah.
And I think that's a new pressure that I
did. Yeah, because everyone's at that point have gotten used to you skiing at that level to where you would qualify for something like a head-to-head final.
Yeah. So it's like, it's no longer where it'd be cool if I made it. It's expected that I make it. And that's a different kind of pressure. And I think that pressure is a privilege, but it's also really freaking hard to handle.
Yeah.
So I was shaking on the dock, and my dad was texting me. They were trying to tell me what the cut was. People were confused. I was literally shaking, couldn't think straight. I hadn't started at 32 off since San Gervasio. So it had been like a month and a half, and the wind was a factor. And I was like, oh my God, I have to start at 32. This is so stressful. And I remember I was talking to Will before I skied, and he was like, put your phone down. Stop looking at the scores.
Just ski.
He's like, you're going to get in the water and the shaking's going to stop. And I kept telling myself, I'm like, it's going to be over in 10 minutes. It's going to be over in 10 minutes. Like, you can get through this. And I ran my 32, and it felt so good. The site was amazing. The drivers were amazing. We had Andrew Bergman, which is always a treat.
Yeah.
So that kind of calmed me down. And then I remember before 35, I was like, okay, you have a job to do. You just need to go out and execute. This isn't an emotional thing. This isn't anything but a job and a task, and you're going to execute it. And I ran 38, and I asked, I was like, hey guys, what's the cut here? Because I was like, do I need a full two? What do I need? Like, make sure I know. And they're like, oh, Allie, like, once you got outside six ball, you were in. I was like,
hello.
Oh, that's nice. Like, kind of took a weight off of me. And I was like, cool, I can try and turn two ball then. And I got a 3, which, again, is a huge score for me and something that I'm very happy with.
Yeah, because, I mean, at San Gervasio, that was your personal best around about that time.
Yeah, so to be a half a buoy off your personal best in a Worlds is not a bad day. So that was super nice. And then finals, I really wanted to ski well, and I put myself in a position to ski well, and unfortunately just made a small mistake, and that's how quickly things can be over, so...
Yeah. Okay. So aside from the skiing, how was the whole vibe and the experience of the Worlds? Because it's totally different from being in a Jax in Groveland in Lake County. You know, everything is there within close proximity to where you normally are accustomed to skiing, but now you're doing it in a foreign land.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's more intense. I think at Jax you could leave and go ski other places. Like, here we were all kind of locked in at this site. Everybody's training at the same time as everybody, your competitors, your friends. The buildup is so intense. Sets are timed, they're rushed. You don't know your driver, you don't know. Like, it's definitely an unsettling week, and it's hard to not get wrapped up in it. I think that the most important thing is kind of just like keeping your head on straight.
And try not to have too many espressos.
Yeah, there was a lot of coffee being drunk that week.
Indeed, indeed. I suspect that that Jack's Lake is probably calling your name around about.
Yes, I do actually have a practice set coming up.
Okay, but we'll rush through this. Okay, so okay. After the World Championships, Mastercraft Pro, wasn't mm-hmm. it?
Yes, it was at my home lake, which is exciting. And obviously, I'm a Mastercraft athlete, so I love when we get a chance to compete behind those boats. And really just feels like getting settled again home. It was a great event. Mastercraft did a great job, as always. Bischoff does an amazing job with events. It was so fun. I got to have Scott Greenwood drive me, which Greeny is like such a huge part of my childhood in skiing. I love having him behind the wheel. So it was super fun. I'm happy with how I skied. I was a little disappointed with finals, but I was proud of myself. I went for that podium spot, and I tried, and it didn't work out, but I'm proud of my commitment and where I'm at in my skiing. I think, like you guys said, I fell at two ball at 39. Three would have been a podium, two would have been fourth. And like when I fell, it put me in sixth, but I wasn't any happier in sixth, or I wouldn't have been any happier in fourth than sixth.
Mm-hmm.
And right now I'm trying to push myself and go for it. So I think that there was some learning done at Mastercraft Pro, which is all you can ask for.
Okay. So as we kind of conclude this podcast, what does the off season look like for you now?
I am going to ski a bit more probably through November, work on testing some skis, maybe just stay on the water so I don't take too much time off. And then in December, I'm going back to where I grew up and I'm going to snow ski with my friends.
Indeed, indeed.
And get strong in the gym.
Okay, so do you kind of feel that's the only thing that's missing now? Because I've noticed that you've kind of toughened up a little bit. You know, you're not going to shy away from too many challenges out there on the slalom course much anymore, and you don't suffer falls easily.
No, I think I don't really feel like I have anything missing per se. I think it's a process, and I've taken a few steps in the right direction, and I've had a few small wins this season, but there's always things to keep moving forward on. And yeah, I'm going to stick with my routine and my plan and process and keep working on it.
Any thanks or anything else you want to say in closing?
Just to my sponsors, Masterline, Mastercraft, Good Skis, and Rain Clothing. They have believed in me well before it was probably reasonable. So thank you guys.
And thank you very much, Ali Garcia. And that concludes this edition of the TWBC podcast. More episodes to come. But in the meantime, it is ciao for now.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.